I had an epiphany Saturday morning, and I thought about it for 2 nights, 3 days. Hey, LeBron, NBA and the AM is here. We're all good.
Everybody get up, it's time to slam now. We got a real jam going down. Welcome to the Space Jam. Here's your chance, do your dance at the Space Jam. Alright.
Hello. Welcome to NBA in the AM on WMFO 91.5 Tufts Freeform Radio. I'm your host, Marcus Frank, here with my co-host,
Gavin Evans.
Gavin, what a beautiful, beautiful week in NBA basketball, right?
It has been quite the week. There's been a lot to watch, and it was a ton of fun.
Honestly, I didn't watch too much ball this week. Lots of essays to write, but there's definitely a lot of good stuff to talk about. Definitely some teams that started off really hot. Some players who've started off hot. Some teams who started off really cold and pretty big disappointments, like the Mavericks, the Magic. I mean, the Pelicans, it looks like it's over for them completely. I mean, 0-7 start. A lot of good stuff to talk about.
We have a little bit of a larger sample size now with some of these games, so it's a little easier to make long term like looking at a team, how that team's going to be, because it's not just one or two games that they could win by luck, right?
Yeah.
So we saw some teams that started off really hot and have come back down to earth. Some teams that have started off really hot and not come back down to earth yet. I know you want to talk about that with the Bulls.
Yeah, a little bit of hater energy with that. And the Sixers, I'm sorry. And maybe even the Heat. Some teams who have started off really cold that maybe could have a bounce back. You can look at shooting variance later to see that. Offensive, defensive ratings. Also, the Terry Rozier, Chauncey Billups gambling drama. If we have time, we can touch on that because that's pretty important. And just in general, our top five most hopeless franchises. A lot to look forward to in this show. Gavin, what games did you watch this week, just to start off?
So I watched most of the Sixers games. They did lose to the Celtics, unfortunately. That is our one loss right now. But other than that, we're 5-1. We, I think we're in a pretty good spot. We play the Bulls tonight, who, as we were talking about, they're a very hot team right now. They're
red
all
hot Bulls.
All shooting, crazy percents from three. But I think it'll be a good chance to really prove ourselves. We have been playing kind of lower tier opposition up until this point. Hornets, Wizards, unfortunately the Celtics. So it'll be a nice opportunity for this team to prove themselves. And Jared McCain, I think, should be the story of the night, is probable to play. It'll be his first time playing basketball in many months.
Yeah, I mean, beginning of last season.
Yeah, almost nearly a year then. Wow. So he's been out for quite some time. So I wouldn't expect too much from McCain tonight in terms of pure, production, points, assists, but it's very good that he's getting back on the court. He can get back up to full, NBA speed. Obviously he's a very young guy. He's not like Embiid, where he's going to need to take a longer time to rehab from injury and get back up to NBA pacing and whatnot. So I think that's probably the story of tonight.
Definitely say, though, it's a pretty radically different team from last season. I mean,
yeah,
in terms of, the shots that are being taken by players. You didn't have Quinn and Grimes at the beginning of last season chucking up all these shots, and you're still without your second highest paid player, and Paul George, who, could have a bounce back year. Do you know when is he? How long is he out for?
Yeah, so I was looking at this yesterday. He, I think should be back relatively soon. I think ideally by the end of November. But, you know, he is an older guy. He definitely had a fall off last year. So I don't think he'll be, like, immediately plug and play, you know, back up to full NBA minutes when he comes back. He probably will have a minutes restriction, you know, won't play the second half of back-to-backs, that kind of thing, like Embiid is currently doing. You know, we may even see that with Maxey, to be honest. Or not Maxey, McCain. So, but I think ideally by the end of November, George will be back. Maybe not fully, but he ideally will be playing in games by then.
What type of role Paul George will be in.
Yeah,
with it's the start to the season that they're having, especially with Tyrese and VJ. Is he going to become their third best player like a lot of people envisioned for last year, or will he take more of like a glue guy role? On the Clippers, I don't really like Paul George personally. I think he's kind of a soft player. Podcast P, as many call him. He likes to make a lot of excuses for why his teams fall short when in reality it's just because he's not that guy really that he used to be. And I mean, he never really was that guy on the Pacers or on the Thunder. He had one really good conference finals run on the Clippers, but since then, playoff disappointment after playoff disappointment. And this season, he might have a chance to redeem himself in this new role.
I think I would really like to see him take a little bit of a smaller role on this team with the way these young guys are playing, Maxey, Edgecombe, Grimes, hopefully McCain. I think him coming back and taking, you know, touches away from them and taking shots away from them could really be detrimental to the team. Because, you know, this is a team that has had a lot of, like, come-from-behind wins this season. And, you know, in situations like that, when the touches are going to Paul George instead of one of these young guys who's really hot right now, that I think that could be really detrimental to the team. So I would really like to see him accept a little bit of a smaller role, even with what he's getting paid.
Getting paid like what, almost
too much money,
$50 million. I mean, if you're the 76ers, you've got to like really kick yourself signing PG and Embiid to those ridiculous contracts.
Well, I will say he's getting paid a lot, but when he comes back, we do need more people in the forward spot. We're pretty thin there. And another thing I want to talk about with the Sixers is that they have the three players with the most minutes per game in the NBA. Maxey at 1 with 42.5 minutes per game, VJ Edgecombe at 2 with 39 minutes per game, and Kelly Oubre Jr. with 38 minutes per game. Those are the top three most minutes per games from any players in the NBA. That isn't sustainable. Like, they can't run their players into the ground like that this early in the season. So, like, to some extent, they do need a guy like Paul George back to relieve some of that stress.
Definitely Maxey and Paul George.
Yeah.
Not Maxey. McCain and Paul George, once they're back, they'll alleviate those heavy minutes. I mean, you'd think their head coach was, like, Tom Thibodeau with those minute distributions.
Yeah.
Should be an interesting season once they have a bigger sample size. I mean, if you look at their shooting splits this season, it's definitely a little out of the ordinary. So last season, just for clarity, the average three-point shooting last season was 36.5%, which the 76ers last season shot 34.1%, which is a little lower, but that could definitely be explained away by all of their injuries, them not having their like two best guys for most of the season. This season, they're shooting 40.8%, Gavin. And they're taking 42.0% of their shots as threes. So if you look at those stats, you could definitely see why they've started off so hot. And if you wait for the shooting to even out, you could see them drop more games. But I guess if you add PG, McCain, Embiid starts playing much better, could definitely alleviate the shooting variance.
Yeah. Well, I also think it's interesting to look at where these threes are coming from on the court. A lot of them are guys like Edgecombe or Maxey taking the threes from closer to the top of the key. They don't really have any like wings who are taking corner threes. I think the last time I checked, the team had made three corner threes all season. Well, I think the numbers are relatively sustainable for like percentages and whatnot. I don't think it's like sustainable to only be shooting them from the top of the key with like your guards, and you need a guy like Paul George to come back and take those like, you know, corner threes. So I know you were watching the Clippers game last night. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, I watched all of the Clippers games this week, either the condensed possessions or the live game. I think they look really kind of out of sorts. I think if you add like pretty much a entirely new bench unit and add a new starter in Bradley Beal to the starting lineup, it can be a little difficult at first to find some continuity and synergy, but I think they're looking better. One thing that just stands out, Kawhi, I mean, he looks incredible. Last night, his defense was really, really strong. He had a bunch of really good steals. He looks as clutch as ever. I don't know if you saw, did you see the game winner he had against the Pelicans?
I did see
that. I mean, that was insane.
Against the Pelicans, keep in mind.
But still, it's incredible with all of his injuries, his knees. He's fought back. You'd think last season a lot of the NBA pundits were saying he should retire, that he's washed, but he's really getting up and proving everyone wrong. James Harden looks like just as good as he did last season. I think as of now he's averaging like 23 points, which matches what he averaged last season. Last season he was All-NBA third team. He looks like he's still performing to an All-NBA third team level of play. Still, he looks like an all-star. I think James and Kawhi will be all-stars this season. I don't know if you knew this, but they have the all-star game at Intuit Dome in LA this season, so they'll probably get a nod as players that play in the Intuit Dome as Clippers. Bradley Beal, he was out in the preseason, and he looked kind of rough in the first couple of games, but last night he had a bounce-back game. He looked much better. He was really spry, really quick. Last year, he was getting a lot of hate on the Suns, right? Especially he was making, like, max contracts, and he wasn't really playing to a max level. But I think this season with a much, much smaller role as, like, maybe even their, like, fourth best player at times, if he can give you, like, 12 points a night with good efficiencies, you'd be pretty happy with that. But if he can give you like 17, 20 a night and just go off maybe some games for 30, that'd be great. Last night, he had 12 points in 20 minutes, shot 62%. But last night was disappointing. They played the Heat. The Heat look like they're embodying Heat culture as always. Their defense was insane. James Harden had like 7 turnovers, which I think is unacceptable. That's something I've noticed. The Clippers have been turning over the ball a lot, which you can't really do in modern NBA, especially if it's such a close game. All those 7 turnovers definitely contributed to their loss, and especially being a really old team, I think the oldest team of all time, you can't turn over the ball because you're not going to be able to get back in transition. I mean, Another thing that stood out to me, I don't know, do you know Chris Dunn?
I do.
I mean, I love Chris Dunn and Derek Jones. They added both of those players last year in the offseason. Both elite perimeter defenders. I think they're both still pretty underrated for how good their defense is. I think Chris Dunn might be, like, the best perimeter defender in the NBA. I mean, he's so good. He gets into the passing lanes. You have to watch his defense. It's pretty insane. He doesn't play like a Lu Dort who... I mean, Lu Dort basically just fouls.
If it's not called, it's not a foul.
And, I mean, if you look at... Not to get off topic, but if you look at the fouls that Shea gets and what Lu Dort does, it's... Lu Dort is playing, like, fouling defense, and Shea is not getting fouled in that... in terms of what Lu Dort is doing, Shea should not be getting those fouls. But back to Chris Dunn. He looks great. Derek Jones... I don't know if you saw the highlights from the Pelicans game and last night, but he's just a freak athlete. It's insane what he does. He's catching insane lobs. They call him Flight 42, I think, because he gets so high up in the air. I mean, his chest is touching the rim. That's how high up he's getting. Big Zubats, 9 points, 18 rebounds. 5 of those offensive rebounds. He's an elite center. Last year he was runner-up for most improved player. Still playing all NBA defense. But the Clippers, hopefully they'll synergize better. Their bench unit last game was John Collins, Chris Paul, Brook Lopez, and Nico Batum. Nico Batum did have a donut. And Chris Dunn, can't forget about him. Nico Batum did have a donut. Chris Paul, 3 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 1 steal. But Chris Paul looks kind of washed to start this season. He's 1 of 5 from 3. Other opposing teams just don't really guard him. His offensive game isn't what it used to be, but he can still dime out like any player in the league. Chris Dunn had 10 points, 4 assists, 3 steals. Shot 2 of 2 from 3, which is what you like to see. I don't know if you watched the Clippers-Nuggets in the playoffs last season, but he was their starting guard or maybe small forward. They were running like a 3-guard lineup, and teams just did not guard him when he was on the 3-point line. So if he can improve that 3-point shooting to like 34%, that'd be good. But Clippers look interesting. Talk about the Heat, who the Clippers played last night. The Heat have started off really hot, actually. In the offseason, they got Norman Powell, which we both liked. I think that was an underrated acquisition. They gave up like a bag of chips to get Norman Powell. And last year, I watched a lot of Norman Powell because he was on the Clippers. And I mean, he's a really interesting player. His game, he doesn't really like create for himself that much, or when he creates it can be a little scary because I think his handle is a little suspect. He's not really a big assister. He's kind of like a Michael Porter Jr., Cam Thomas type player, but more efficient. He's averaging 23.3 points, 6 rebounds, 2.8 assists. I think he could be a sleeper all-star this year with Bam, especially in the weak East, and a bunch of players are out. Trae Young is going to be out. Paolo Banchero is not really playing that well. So I think he could be a sleeper all-star. The Heat have this interesting offense. I don't know if you saw Bam and Norm went on NBA on Prime and broke down their offense, which I think was a little choice decision to give away the secret sauce. But nevertheless, they've got this free-flowing system. They do not run traditional plays. It's kind of focus more on ball movement and maximizing the open space on the court. They signed Grizzlies assistant coach from last year, this French guy who instituted the same offense in the Grizzlies, but him along with Taylor Jenkins were both offed because of Ja Morant. Ja didn't really like this system. We'll talk about the Grizzlies next and their struggles, but Bam looks to be having a bounce back season, 22.4 points, 9 rebounds, 3.3 assists, and they're doing all of this without Tyler Hero. as of now, the Heat are the 11th best offense and the 3rd best defense. That defense, still tenacious as ever. Definitely a credit, testament to the Heat culture that they've helped establish under Eric Spoelstra, who's just really, he's elevating these guys to an elite level. He's really a good floor raiser. I'd wonder, we said they would be in the play-in range. I wonder if they could be a 6th seed once they get Hero back. Maybe they make some midseason trades.
Yeah, I mean, they're 4-3 right now. They're 5th in the East, tied with the the Cavs and the Knicks. So they definitely have a shot at like a mid playoff seed, I think. It comes down kind of like to tiebreakers and how well they finish the season, getting a few games above some of those other teams. So you mentioned the Grizzlies. That's a very interesting situation to talk about. So for anybody that doesn't know, Ja Morant was suspended 1 game the other day for comments and conduct detrimental to the team. I'm not exactly sure what he said or did, but he was suspended for a game.
He made these comments. I think he had some like choice words in the locker room after the game, and he was getting interviewed. I saw this clip on Twitter. A reporter asked him, like, what do you think of your game? He had like 7 points. He had a really bad game, just terrible. I think it was against the Lakers. And he was like, ask the coaching staff, which, I mean, you can't really be rude to your beat reporters.
Yeah.
Just as the franchise player. I mean, that's not a good look on you, a good look on the organization. And Ja Morant, his track record is terrible. I mean, he's really just become this like toxic player that, toxic for your locker room and your team. I don't know if
talk about your team. Toxic for a locker room or a team. He was asked about, whether or not he was like excited to come back from his suspension and get back to playing basketball, and he said no, and that like he doesn't have like the same joy for the game anymore. And that is just not a guy that you want on your team. That's not a good thing for a locker room. That's not a good thing to have around some of your rookies. And I want to talk about one of the Grizzlies rookies who's been really exciting up until this point. But Ja is just, there's so much drama around him. There's always something going on. He's always getting suspended, whether it be by the team or the league. It's just going to continue.
The gun incident on Instagram Reels.
There's been some incidents that he's been suspended for, and it's just not a good situation. He could be a potential like trade target, but I don't think
you would want him. Though.
That's the thing, is the Grizzlies want to get rid of him, but I don't think anybody really wants to bring him in, unless you're like truly a desperate struggling team, Pelicans or the Wizards maybe. I just don't see a bright future for him.
No. I saw a crazy stat. He hasn't played 7 games straight in like years. I think like 2 or 3 years, which Brian Windhorst, ESPN, he said there's no trade market really for Ja. Maybe they could look to elevate him, get him on like a good run, and then just ship him off on the trade deadline.
You look at his games played the last few years. He played 50 games last season. In the season before, the 23-24 season, he only played 9 games. There's been a mix-in of injuries with this, so he hasn't missed games exclusively because of suspensions, but he's not playing that much. He keeps getting suspended. He keeps getting hurt. It's not a bright future. The one bright spot on the Grizzlies this year, I'd say, has been their rookie, I believe Cedric Coward is his name.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's,
He has been electric. He's averaging 15 points, 5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, and a steal on very efficient shooting. He's shooting 59% from the field and 48% from the three, which are probably not the most sustainable numbers ever, but they aren't crazy. I'd expect the three-point shooting to probably come down to earth a little bit. But I think he's definitely a solid Rookie of the Year candidate. I think he's in the race. He doesn't get talked a lot about by, like, national media and whatnot because he's on the Grizzlies, which is, you know, pretty small market and just bad team. But especially, I don't know if you saw, Dylan Harper is going to be out for several weeks.
Yeah.
Which could kind of knock him back in contention for Rookie of the Year. Rookie of the Year is not one of the awards that has a 65-game minimum. So, you know, Harper could come back and win it, but getting hurt and then, you know, having to ramp back up, minutes restriction, whatnot, it's probably going to knock him not out of the race, but, you know, definitely down a few pegs. So that leaves a big opportunity for a guy like Cedric Howard to come into the realm of the VJ Edgecombe and Cooper Flags of the Rookie of the Year race. But he's just been really fun to watch, really electric player. I also had one more thing about the Grizzlies, is that I got a notification from TickPick. I'm not really sure why, because obviously we're not in Memphis, Tennessee, but it was telling me that the Grizzlies get in price for tickets, the game that Ja was suspended, $2 to get into the stadium. $2.
Wow, that's like really...
I don't think you can get a Big Mac at McDonald's for $2 anymore. No. Like, it's so absurdly cheap. And then the problem with that is it's kind of a cycle because teams make most of their revenue off of, like, tickets. And jersey sales, and if you don't have guys whose jersey you want to buy, and you're not making money on tickets because you're just filling up seats, selling them for $2 a ticket, your revenue goes down. And, you know, then when the revenue goes down, the ownership is going to be stingier. They're not going to want to pay players as much. It's kind of a little bit of like a vicious cycle.
Yeah, that's really crazy.
It's something that's really bad for franchises as a whole.
Especially a small market team like the Grizzlies.
Yeah. I got the notification and I like couldn't believe what I was reading. Like $2 to get into a National Basketball Association game is crazy.
Especially with them shipping off Desmond Bane for, like, 5 first-round picks, getting an incredible return. I think they could do a soft rebuild. They just signed Jaren Jackson Jr. Mm-hmm. on a long-term extension. And Ja Morant is locked up until the 28-29 season. So he's not really set to become a free agent, so he can't really force his way out. But I mean, you could see them try and trade him off to any team because since he's locked up, I think many teams would be interested. Yeah. We could just look through some of these potential trade mock-ups, like the Kings. I think even the Rockets could be interested in him. They really do need a point guard.
They do really need a point guard. You are
but
right
he
about
is
that.
Not much of a shooter. I think the Toronto Raptors could be interested. They have a lot of depth, but they have too much wing depth, and their roster is kind of weird. There's not a lot of continuity there. So you could definitely see him traded, but I think the real issue with Ja, he's not a shooter. And a point guard who's not much of a shooter, who's not really an elite playmaker, I don't really think there's that much room for a player like that now in 2025 where teams are shooting 40% of their shots are from three. So,
yeah, and I'm not sure anybody really wants to like give up assets to get a guy who is that kind of off the court baggage.
What if he pulls like a James Harden and forces his way out? Maybe puts on like 30 pounds.
They're not going to win anything this season. They should just bench him and
goes to New Orleans. Links up with Zion Williamson, gets some tips from him. Also, I think the Timberwolves could be interesting. They don't really have a point guard anymore. I don't know if you saw, they've been running like Dante DiVincenzo at point guard, who's not really a point guard, but
The Grizzlies, I think, they're definitely kind of a soft rebuild candidate. There's a lot of teams that I think this year should really just embrace losing and try and win in the draft lottery. And I think the Grizzlies are a team like that. Because you mentioned they do have Jaren Jackson Jr. locked down for several more years. Pretty elite defender there. They have a young, exciting rookie in Cedric Coward. They have, theoretically a good point guard in Ja Morant. They're not winning. So I think this season, what are they're currently...
They do have their first-round pick in the 2026 draft.
Yeah. And they have a war chest of picks, especially after that Desmond Bain trade. It was four first-rounders in that trade alone. So I really think they should probably this season embrace a soft tank. They're not winning anything in this West.
No.
It's just kind of give up, to be honest.
I can't help but feel bad for Grizzlies fans.
Yeah.
Last year, they had a couple of bad years where Ja Morant was injured. They were, the worst team. Last year, Ja came back. They started off really hot. They were, the third best seed. And then all of a sudden, something clicked. And they just fell off a cliff into the play-in. They fired their head coach, weeks before the playoffs. And, now they don't really know what's going on with their roster. And I think we could see them make a radical shift this season.
Yeah, absolutely agree.
We mentioned Zion Williamson earlier. So we can talk about the Pelicans. They've had, a catastrophically bad start to this season.
Yeah, they were starting, I saw the other night, DeAndre Jordan in 2025.
Crazy.
Starting at center while they're playing the Nuggets. DeAndre Jordan should not be guarding Nikola Jokic in the year 2025. That's just malpractice from coaching and just, team building, everything. They're 0-6 right now. I don't think they're going to get a whole lot better.
No.
Do you want to talk about their pick situation?
Yeah, if you start off 0-6 in the West, they don't really have much hope of making a playoff seed. Last season, two games separated the third seed from the sixth seed. And their pick situation, it's like malpractice at this point. So right before Game 7 of the NBA Finals, the Pacers had Pelicans had the Indiana Pacers 2026 first round pick. So they traded that pick back to the Pacers. And in the Game 7, Tyrese Haliburton tore his Achilles or his ACL.
Achilles.
And he's now out for this season. And then the Pacers lost Miles Turner, who's probably their third best player, in the offseason. And they're just completely punting the season this year. So, and they also traded their 2026 first-round pick, unprotected, to the Hawks to move up 10 picks from the 23rd to the 13th and draft Derek Queen, which is malpractice considering they were really bad last year. They're employing Zion Williamson, who hasn't even played 50% of his games. Is their GM, betting against the team? I don't know. Who's their GM? Chauncey Billups and Terry Rozier? That's just crazy to me. You gave up, two potential top two picks in the draft. And they got back Derek Queen?
Who has not been a great rookie so far, right?
He's been mediocre. He's not really much of a defender, I think. And it seems to me now that they thought they were gonna have a win now season in a really loaded Western Conference, which is very short sighted. They traded for Jordan Poole, traded CJ McCollum for him, but they haven't been starting Jordan Poole. They've been starting Jeremiah Fears. I don't think they're really having a lot of continuity in their roster. Talk about continuity. I think they've been putting together like 20 different lineups, 20 plus around Zion. And Zion, he's had a really disappointing season so far. He's averaging like 22.8 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists. He never really took the leap. His best season was his second season. He played 61 games, 27 points. And since then, he really hasn't played well. He isn't a three-point shooter, like, at all. He hasn't made a single three this season, right? More of a finishing around the basket type of guy. He can't really make free throws, which isn't good if most of your game is finishing at the rim and powering your way through. He's shooting 48.7% from the field, which, I mean, that's just absolutely terrible. And he's also, there was a lot of rumors, or there was a lot of talk about him losing weight, but he looks like the same Zion on that New Orleans diet, eating those beignets. I don't know. It's just, it's bizarre to me. Right now, they're the 27th best offense, or 27th offense. Terrible. And they're the 29th ranked defense. I don't know what to say, honestly.
What's that, the Stephen A. Smith clip where he's like, the chefs in New Orleans all want him to come to their restaurants because word on the street is he'll even eat the table. Which was an absurd thing to say about somebody on national TV, first off.
Crazy.
But, like,
we can say it here.
he really, like, he's had a lot of off-the-court issues with health and some other stuff. And he's not been playing as many games as, you know, the Pelicans would like him to. Their future is really in the gutter. I'd say the one bright spot, you brought up Jeremiah Fears. He's been pretty good. He's averaging nearly 14 points on 46.5% from the field. He's been all right. And that jersey, he wears number 0, so his jersey says Fears 0. Absolutely elite jersey.
That is pretty elite.
The Pelicans jerseys are nice. They look good.
Up there with PG-13.
Yeah.
CP3.
But outside of Jeremiah Fears, their future is pretty cooked.
I think at this point, like, take the hit and trade back for your pick.
I'd say rebuild and, like, tank this season, but they don't own their picks. So they really would have to trade, like, some important pieces to get a first-round pick back this season. Maybe a guy like Herb Jones.
The Hawks do have the Pelicans pick. So, I mean, I think, like, if they're still this bad, would the Hawks be willing to take part in, like, a Zion trade or a Herb Jones or Trey Murphy III? I mean, you really don't want to give up your first-round pick if you're the worst team in the league, especially in a pretty loaded 2026 class, like we've been saying.
That's Cameron the thing, Boozer. Is this Pelicans pick is going to be very, very valuable this year because they are bad. So it will be like a premium on this pick to get it. So they would have to give up some very important pieces, and it'd just be really expensive.
But, I mean, who wants Zion? He's played 45% of his career games. Do you know, is Atlanta, they're known for good food, right? Probably, yeah. So, definitely, I don't think Atlanta would want him. Where do you think has the worst food? Like, probably Minnesota?
Yeah. Honestly, he could be a decent fit in Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know. Minnesota's kind of...
I don't know what the T-Wolves have that they could give up in a trade for him.
Maybe Julius Randle just signed an extension. I know Rudy's on, like, a crazy high extension. I think they still have some of their picks, but... Yeah, I mean, just the Pelicans are terrible.
Is Ant still on his rookie deal?
That's it. No, I don't think so.
I was going to say, his extensions are going to cost so much money. Since we brought up Atlanta... Trae Young is out for at least a month, I believe, right? Yeah. They're 3-4 right now. Probably going to get worse without Trae Young.
Oh, 100%.
Like, significantly worse. They're at the 9 seed right now. I think they will drop. Their brightest spot is owning the Pelicans pick, because they actually don't own their own pick. They gave it up to the Spurs, which is just absurd that the Spurs are going to have most likely another very high lottery pick.
Please, no.
In this year's draft. If we see a guy like Cameron Boozer go to the Spurs, I will be... Just jump on the Spurs bandwagon now is all I'm saying, because they will be a dynasty if they get
that. Please, Adam Silver, don't let this happen. Please.
It's really absurd. Speaking of the Spurs, actually, Wemby, obviously, we've talked a lot about, and there's been a lot of hype around him. He's, I think, currently the MVP favorite. He's currently the most improved player favorite. He's currently the defensive player of the year favorite. Obviously, having a great season. But he did have his first game that you'd probably consider, a bad game. He had a 9-point, 9-rebound, 2-assist, 5-stock game. So, obviously, the defense is still there, right? I think it was 1 steal, 4 blocks. So the stocks are there, and his defensive gravity is obviously enormous when he's on the court. But 9 points, 9 rebounds, 2 assists is probably the first game that we can call, like, a stinker from him.
This season, yeah. I mean, PU, that's just really gross. But still able to put up elite defense. I mean, he's like 7'7", so... He can just stand there, his hands up, and just swat the ball down. I mean, it's easy for him.
Yeah.
We've been saying this. It's like playing basketball against your 3-year-old child at that point, the way he's blocking these shots.
Yeah, and if you compare the way teams are playing against them when he's on and off the court, it's like night and day. His defensive gravity is just so huge, and... He's just such a game changer. Like, you need to game plan around him. You need to, change your style of play depending on, whether or not he's on the court, that kind of thing. The Spurs, unfortunately, do have a little bit of the injury bug. Dylan Harper is going to be out several weeks. Mentioned this earlier, is likely to remove him from the Rookie of the Year race, even without the 65-game hard cap. But if there was a time for it to happen, De'Aaron Fox is eyeing an early November return. That might be looking at a little bit closer to mid-November now. But if there was a time to lose your, rookie elite point guard, it's when you're going to get your veteran elite point guard back. They did extend him to, it was somewhere around the realm of like 4 years, $200 million, right?
Yeah, he got a really big contract. He got a big payday.
Huge contract. Which is really interesting to think about, right? When you draft point guards back-to-back at, like, Steph Castle, I think, was the 4th pick. Dylan Harper was the 2nd. You draft 2 point guards back-to-back and then trade for... They traded a bag of chips for him, but still trade for and then extend on such a huge deal a guy like De'Aaron Fox.
I think you make that trade, though, knowing you're going to get more. But I think, we were talking about them owning the Hawks pick. If that is like a top 5 pick, do you see them maybe trading it for like Giannis? If the Bucks cool off,
if the Bucks cool off,
they
need
to do a consolidation trade.
That's a very good point.
Consolidation trade. Oh my god.
So there was a lot of Giannis trade talk this past off season and this past year. And the Spurs were absolutely, I think, a team that was in that conversation with their pick, last year that turned into Dylan Harper. Yeah. Depending on how he comes back from injury, how De'Aaron Fox look, how kind of guys emerge this season, I could absolutely see them trading for Giannis with that pick. Because that is a super valuable pick. Because the top 3 picks, I mean, it's kind of true every year, but next year especially, are like... franchise like rebuilders, they're guys that will come in and plug and play, hopefully, and revamp your franchise. So that's the kind of pick the Bucks need, and that's something they could be looking for with Giannis.
Maybe trade like De'Aaron Fox, the third pick. And I think Giannis would fit alongside Wemby pretty well. I mean, Wemby can space the floor. And since Giannis isn't much of a shooter, I mean, that really makes up for...
If you get Giannis...
I think it's over.
I might stop watching basketball, to be honest with you. That's just such an unfair team. I mean, think about that. That's Steph Castle, Dylan Harper, Giannis, Wemby, and, like, probably, like,
Kevin Vassell, Jeremy Sohan off the bench.
Keldon Johnson.
Keldon Johnson. Yeah.
Like, that's just an unfair team.
Luke Kornet.
Luke Kornet at backup center. That's just unfair. If it happens, it's really over for the league. The Spurs are, like, honestly in one of the best positions of any team in the league for the future, I think. Their management is absolutely elite. They're sitting at 5-1 right now. Wemby has looked amazing. You know, De'Aaron Fox is coming back. Everything's kind of going their way, to be honest.
5-0 to start the season. Now they're 5-1, but that's the first time they've gone 5-0 in like years.
Yeah, a long time.
Years.
And all of this with a rookie, or I guess not rookie, but very new head coach as well, right? Because Pop only retired like halfway through last season, or you know, with his health issues. So I forget the name of their coach, but he's been in the building. Mitch Johnson, officially took over the role May 2nd, 2025. He was the interim head coach for most of the 24-25 season, but still very new head coach. He has been in the building, so he has familiarity with the systems and the teams. But it's really impressive job from him, to be honest. Obviously, impressive job from the management with the drafting and, you know, the trades and whatnot to acquire the future draft capital.
But they have a treasure trove of picks, as well. So we mentioned the Bucks. To quickly touch on the Bucks, they've had a pretty good start. They're the third seed in the East, 5-2 to start. Giannis, we said this in our preseason predictions, and this take is looking pretty solid. He's averaging, 34 points per game, 13.3 rebounds, and almost 7 assists, which he's putting up really good numbers. And I think Jokic is having a fall off from last season.
And it's absurd that we can call these numbers a fall off.
Jokic is averaging like 22-point triple-double, right?
Yeah, but he's still, it's absurd that those numbers could be a fall off, but they are. I think that just shows you the peaks that he has reached, and in my opinion, the robbery of MVP last year. But
Giannis is having 34.3% usage, which he's like top five in the league in usage rate. He's carrying this roster of like plumbers and electricians, basically. Like, obviously, they're all elite NBA players that he's around, but. Like, Kevin Porter Jr. was their starting point guard before he got injured.
Yeah.
They just have guys that...
Ryan Rollins.
You don't... I mean, even though it's a weak East, you wouldn't think they would be the third seed. And if you look at their shooting, because I think the shooting splits, even though it doesn't tell the full story, it shows just generally, like, if a team's shooting, like, 50% from three, like, they're going to cool off. The Bucks are shooting a pretty reasonable percent from three. Last season, they shot 39.6% at a three-point frequency of 42.4, which I think that's one of the higher in the league, but still relatively reasonable. This season they're shooting 40.6% so far at a frequency of 43.7. So they're definitely going to cool off, but it's not really that crazy.
Well, you know,
say they could keep it up.
Absolutely. And you know what's also interesting is you look at the numbers Giannis is averaging, and you're like, okay, they're running him into the ground, playing him, you know, like 45 minutes a game. He's averaging 32 and a half minutes per game. Though that's like pretty normal. That's not crazy.
That's like pretty low, honestly.
That's for the numbers
for
he's
him,
averaging, that's
and
low.
And how mid that team is?
Yeah. And so it makes what he's doing all the more impressive. It means he's more likely to stay healthy. And it means their future is a little brighter this season. Another one of my kind of favorite stories from the Bucks this year is they've had a little bit of a breakout from Ryan Rollins, one of their guards. He had a 32-point game, a 25-point game. He was cut from the Wizards a few years ago for shoplifting from Target. I think kind of drifted to the Bucks in free agency or something. And he's been having a pretty decent season, averaging 17 points a game, 4 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals. He's been having a pretty solid season, and just like funny story behind him.
But yeah, the Bucks definitely look good. We have a quick PSA for you guys. A don't drink and drive PSA. On February 9th, 2014, a drunk driver headed the wrong way down a Southern California freeway, crashed, and killed 6 people, including her own sister. If you're under the influence of anything, never even think about getting behind the wheel of a car and driving. People die that way. A public service message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Thank you very much, Marcus, for that PSA and a very important message.
Back to the NBA.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about the Celtics. I think that's obviously, you know,
important being a Boston-based radio station.
Yeah, I feel like we haven't talked about them enough. So they're 3-5 right now. They did lose at home last night to the Utah Jazz, who have, you know, been kind of an interesting team. Keontae George had like a 30-point game, I think, 31 points. But the Celtics, I mean, we always knew they were in a rebuild this season, or like a little bit of a soft rebuild, you know, Tatum out for the year and whatnot. But I think they kind of need to like a little bit more fully embrace the tank. I feel like...
Blow it up more.
Yeah, blow it up more.
Derek White, like, get him off.
Yeah, Jaylen Brown had like I think 30 something points last night as well.
36.
Like let some of the younger guys maybe take some more shots, and you know, if you lose some more games, this is the year to do it.
He was 0-for-9 from 3. That's really bad.
Yeah. Like
he's averaging good points this season.
This is really the season where you don't want to have one of those like mid, you know, sneak into the 10th seed, losing the play-in type of seasons.
No.
That's like the worst position you could end up in this season. And I'm not too familiar with what their like war chest of draft picks look like.
They do own their pick next year, and they own a good number of their picks, which is smart.
Yeah, they really just embrace the tank. They need to get out of like the you know, Hornets, Magic, Hawks, Raptors kind of tier of like.
Bulls.
Yeah, but the Bulls are at least 5-1 this season. There's a tier of teams right now that are like somewhere around the 3-4, 3-5. Like they need to get out of that tier and into the bottom tier, which is kind of a weird thing to say, but they need to get into the tier of the 1-6 Pacers, 1-6 Wizards, and the 0-7 Nets, you know?
Definitely. You just mentioned the Bulls. I think we should quickly touch on the Bulls before we run out of time today. The Bulls had a red hot start. They were 5-0 before they lost to the Knicks a couple days ago. Josh Giddey, he's looking like an all-star.
Yeah.
He's nearly averaging a triple-double. Right now, he's averaging 22.2 points, 9.2 rebounds, 8.7 assists. That Josh Giddey, Alex Caruso trade it's looking pretty good for both teams. I saw a lot of chatter. Oh, the Bulls lost the trade. Josh Giddey's not that good. He was like top five pick a couple years ago, but he's looking like a really good player. I mean,
yeah,
for this team, he's elevating these guys. They've got like a pretty mid team. I mean, they've been playing stuck
for years. Yeah.
And they moved off of DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine. And after they got Josh Giddey, to end last season, they went on like a hot streak. And I saw something since like the last season, including the last part of the season, they've been 25-5. So I think that's not really like a short sample size. However, I mean, I don't know if you saw this last season, but Josh Giddey did hit like some insane shots. He hit that half-court game winner,
yeah,
which was absolutely insane. But I mean, if they can be like top six, I think that'd be solid. The only issue, they just don't really have like a guy, you know. They don't have like a superstar player, which I think if you want to have championship aspirations and like try and achieve what they did in the 90s with the six championships, two three-peats, you're gonna need to get a guy that's elite. But I think they should have some cap space. They signed Josh Giddey to a steal of a deal now, it's looking like $25 million a year, 4 year, $100 million. So I think if they could sign like a star player, they could really put together an elite team. But
yeah,
they're
absolutely
looking good so far.
And I mean, they really didn't give up all that much for Giddey. It was mostly just Alex Caruso and maybe a pick or two. So very, very much a win-win situation. Caruso was a pretty crucial, bench piece on that Thunder championship-winning team. Giddey, obviously, I think his value at the time of the trade had been lowered a little bit due to some off-the-court issues.
Yes,
but
some allegations.
He's developed very nicely in Chicago, and he's definitely looking like he could be an all-star this year. I mean, nearly averaging a triple-double. It's a decently bright future for them. But one thing you and I have been talking about just on our own is that they are shooting, like, an absurdly high, like, as a team, at an absurdly high three-point percentage, and it's just not sustainable.
And some of those guys that are making those threes, not three-point shooters. This season,
Patrick Williams shouldn't be shooting like almost 50% from three.
Recent data, 45.7%. Last year, they shot around average 36.7. And like around 40% of their shots are threes. I think that could also mean Josh Giddey's assist numbers are slightly inflated because a lot of his assists are driving and kicking out to guys from three. But I mean, they also are without Colby White, which a lot of people thought he was their best player. So I mean, he comes back, maybe they cool off, but he gives them more offensive firepower. Also, we didn't mention this, Matas Buzelis, who was their pick last year, he's putting together a strong season. I think it'd be interesting to follow the Bulls. That's all we have today, folks. Thank you for listening to NBA in the AM, airing every Tuesday at 6 a.m. on 91.5
WMFO in Medford. Yep. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you guys next week.